So thank you very much for having me speak today. When John and Carolyn first asked me, I felt very intimidated, actually, because there's been so many great people from our fellowship who've gotten up here and told their story. But here I am. And I named my talk, what did I call it? Journey of a Lifetime. And that was kind of partly in jest because everybody's always talking about their vacation of a lifetime. But also because I think our spiritual journey is a lifetime journey, and we always keep growing and learning, hopefully. My journey has had lots of twists and turns, like everybody else's, and I think probably maybe our journeys are most important to ourselves and to our inner circle, but I found that our journeys actually aren't all that much different, and there's lots of intersections of people's journeys. So I was asked to speak about my spirituality and how it's developed over my life and the people who have influenced me, and especially those who have touched my heart. So it was a good time to reflect and think about my past. I was raised in Madison, Wisconsin, in a very working class neighborhood. My dad worked at a factory, and he was a union rep for as long as I can remember. That was a really important part of our family. There were strikes, and I remember that being stress in our family life when there was a strike and my dad was out of work. But I also remember my family grocery shopping for other people who had less than we had. There were certain stores we didn't shop at because they union busted. So, you know, my father took his work very seriously. My dad picked up other people to go to work, and they were probably just carpooling, but I know there was at least one family who did not own a car, and my family took them to a lot of different things, a lot of shopping and events. My mom took our next-door neighbor had a stroke really early in life, and his wife didn't drive, and so my mom took Mabel grocery shopping once a week and on lots of different errands. And when we got out for school in the morning, Mabel and my grandpa Ed and my mom were already up drinking coffee and reading the newspaper articles out loud to each other and talking about them, and that was kind of just normal to us when we got up, that there would already be people at our house. When my grandma died on my mom's side of the family, then my grandpa moved in with us, and he lived with us for about 10 years. And I had a single uncle in Toma who also came and spent a lot of weekends with our family and vacations with our family. My mom also worked. She was a waitress and a hostess, and she worked the dinner hour and into the evenings. So in the summer, because she had her mornings and early afternoons free, all the neighborhood kids would pile into her Nash Rambler convertible. There was like kids on everybody's laps, and we all had our towels hanging out the window, blowing in the wind. I can see it so clearly. It was, highly illegal today, but it wasn't back then. And we all went to the beach for the day. And pretty much every day that it was sunny, we were at the beach. And my mom packed lunches for us and for a lot of neighborhood kids as well. She packed lunches. We could always bring kids home after school, and they could stay for supper if they wanted to. We had a very open household that way. So these are some of my childhood memories, and as I was thinking about them, I realized I don't think either of my parents would ever have thought about any of this as volunteer work. They would have never used that terminology. It's just what you did for your family and your neighbors. And I suppose it's the folly of youth that we don't really pay that much attention to our parents' lives. They're just our parents, and you know, we're more interested in our own lives. And it honestly wasn't until my dad's funeral that I became more aware of my father's contributions. There were a lot of men who came up to me when I was in the line telling me how much my dad did for them, how he helped them, how he stood up for them. There was a man in a wheelchair who was hurt in Vietnam War, who was my age, because that was my age, people going to Vietnam War. And he said, "Your dad got me a job in Madison when nobody else would hire me." And I remember feeling proud, but also kind of stunned, like, why didn't I know these things about my dad? You know, so it probably took me way too long to appreciate how much my parents influenced, you know, my direction in life and my character. I was brought up in a Lutheran church. I went to Sunday school. I was confirmed, all of that. And the next big influence that I'm thinking of in my life is my youth pastor, Dwayne. And he taught me about lots of things, but I got involved in the civil rights movement because of Dwayne. And I went to Milwaukee and marched with Father Grappi in the summer of 1968, which was the summer before my senior year of high school. And that led me down a very different path than what I was thinking I would be on. He opened my eyes a lot, and he was pretty influential in me choosing Augsburg College in Minneapolis to go to college. Then my next influence there was my religion professor, who I can't remember his name, but he actually had us go to a different religious service every Sunday, and we could pick them, but, you know, it was Minneapolis, St. Paul. There are a lot of churches, a lot of different religions, and we had a journal about our experience, and then in class we would talk about our experience and how it felt to be there, and we felt welcome, all those kinds of things. And he was the first person who actually encouraged me to question what I believed in and question everything that I was taught. Which was pretty eye-opening for me, and then also along with exploring all these other religions. So he was a pretty big influence. From there, I became involved in the Vietnam War movement, the women's movement, later on the food co-op movement, and the Back to the Land movement. The food co-op movement had a long-lasting impact on me and still does. I went to hear Frances Moore LaPace speak in 1970, and she influenced me to become a vegetarian. And according to my math, that was 53 years ago, so that was a pretty big influence. she talked a lot about living lower on the food chain, and you know, I still really value a lot of her lessons, and I still like to know where my food was raised, and I support local farmers and try to buy fair trade products. And that, you know, some people might not think that's a spiritual belief, but to me it is, because it encompasses my respect for the land, valuing the work and livelihood of other people, and for trying to leave the world a better place. The late 60s and early 70s is when I came of age. I graduated from high school in 69, and that was a pretty heady time to be coming of age. So I'm 18, there's all these new ideas swirling around, all kinds of things to get involved in, and it was really liberating to me as well. As I said, I learned about a lot of different religions. I pretty much rejected my own upbringing, and I really didn't know what I believed in except probably the goodness of people was what I believed in. And I think we were really idealistic in the 70s. I mean, we thought we could change the world. And we did change some things, I believe. And but I also think that being a part of all of that in the early 70s gave me this strong belief that together with other people, you can accomplish things. And I still believe that, and I think it's why I like working on projects with people. I'd much rather roll up my sleeves and do something than to sit in a meeting and hash over details of what we're going to do. I just want to do it, you know? And Marge Piercy, who's one of my favorite writer, expresses it best in her poem, "To Be of Use." A friend sent me this worn-out poem that's been on my bulletin board ever since she sent it to me. to be of use. The people I love the best jump into work headfirst, without dallying in the shadows, and swim off with sure strokes almost out of sight. They seem to become natives of that element, the black, sleek heads of seals bouncing like half-submerged balls. I love people who harness themselves, an ox to a heavy cart, who pull like water buffalo with massive patience, who strain in the muck and the mud to move things forward, who do what has to be done again and again. I want to be with people who submerge in the task, who go into the fields to harvest and work in a row and pass the bags along, who are not parlor generals and field deserters, but move in a common rhythm when the food must come in or the fire must be put out. The work of the world is common as mud. Botched, it smears the hands, crumbles to dust. But the thing worth doing well done has a shape that satisfies, clean and evident. Greek vases for wine or oil, Hopi vases that held corn are put in museums, but you know they were meant to be used. The pitcher cries for water to carry and a person for work that is real. So I'm going to jump a couple decades now. So much later in my life, in the early 90s, Carolyn Mace became a pretty profound teacher for me. I had recently gone through a divorce. My dad died of a sudden heart attack, and 5 months later, my mom was diagnosed with terminal cancer and died 18 months after my dad died. So I was at pretty loose ends. I think I was like 42 or something, and I thought, I'm too young to be the oldest generation, you know, like I'm only 40, you know. And I was a single mother to two teenagers. I was struggling financially. I was trying to get my massage therapy practice going while also holding down another job. I lived in Cochrane, Wisconsin then. That's where I raised my family. And I was commuting to work in Winona, and I did a lot of crying in my car. It was like this safe place to me because, you know, you don't want to burden your kids with all your stuff. So I just remember doing that. And my good friend Patsy from Decorah, Iowa, introduced me to Carolyn Mace. And she gave me a set of six cassette tapes. And for younger people here, that was a thing back then. That's what we had. We had cassette tapes. And I listened to them in my car. It was a half an hour there and a half an hour back. And I listened to them over and over and over. And she shifted my perspective of spirituality in a pretty profound way. She's a medical intuitive, and that could take a whole service to explain what a medical intuitive is, so I'm going to leave it at that. But I am going to share some of her teachings with you that that have been meaningful to me. She's written a lot of books. She's got DVDs, CDs, so if you're interested in her work, you can check her out. So one teaching she talked about, and I'm kind of paraphrasing this, but you wake up in the morning and you have 100% of energy just coming into you. It's a gift. It's grace. It just comes to you. You have 100% of life energy coming into your body for your use for that day. And then you get up and you start thinking about somebody at work who annoys you. And you kind of have a grudge against them. And out goes 15% of your energy to that person, that situation. Then you might have a fight with your spouse or your kids. You leave the house in a huff. There goes another 20% of your energy as you ruminate about that all the way to work. And you start thinking about other people that irritate you or you've had an interaction with, and you give that situation some energy. You might be thinking about how life isn't fair, which that's a whole thing to go, a rabbit hole to go down that does absolutely no good, right? Waste a lot of time, but you give that energy, you know, my life isn't fair, this has happened to me. So now instead, of having 100% of energy to go through your day with, you have 40%, let's say. And so you feel drained, you feel stressed out, you feel exhausted because you're letting all this energy leak from yourself all the time. And so it has to take a toll someplace. And so you start taking energy from your physical body, and it sets you up for disease. And so that's one of Carolyn's big teachings about that. And I started thinking about that and started seeing patterns in myself and in my clients. You know, it's a very different way to look at life, that the emotional and metaphysical energy is very connected to our physical bodies. She has an entire DVD series on this called Energy Anatomy. So I began to see life through a different lens. I began to compare my life a lot less to other people's lives. I began to have less resentments, a lot more gratitude, less regrets. It was really profound for me. She also talked about the light that each of us has to share. And I think that we all like to be like, we want to know that our life made a difference, right? Especially as we get older. It's like, this is my purpose for being here. You want to feel that way. And it would be great if we could all be like Martin Luther King and have this amazing effect on so many things in life. But I remember one of the things that Carolyn said was, what if the neighborhood you lived in needed your light? That's it, you know. Your contributing to your neighborhood makes that a better place. Like, is that enough for you? Because, you know, that could be just your entire purpose in life. So her analysis of spirituality, and she was raised Catholic, and she has a high regard for the nuns who taught her, is really insightful and refreshing to me. She speaks a lot in archetypal stories, but one example she gives is the Christmas story of Jesus being born in a manger. She talks about this teaching being that prophets do not come to us in shiny ways, that we don't become enlightened by some lightning bolt coming down from the heavens, and we don't develop a higher consciousness that way. That spirit enters our lives in humble and very common ways. To stop looking to become enlightened on a weekend workshop, but to look for it along the way every day of your life, and you'll see it, and to let those experiences nourish you and help you to grow spiritually. It's like Barbara talks about every single Sunday. She comes up here and she puts a shell in the water for us to do random acts of kindness, right? It's that. So in another, she talks about gratitude a lot. And one of her stories I remember is that you're sitting at the Thanksgiving table and you have your family and your loved ones all around you, and you have this whole big feast in front of you, and it's not that hard to feel grateful in that situation. But it's when we're down on our luck that we might feel lonely and betrayed that we can dig deep into ourselves and find a sense of gratitude, that's spiritual growth to be celebrated. One last teaching that is sometimes difficult for me to accept and to remember is that if you ask the universe for something, be prepared to have the rug pulled out from underneath you sometimes, because that teaching might come in a very different way than what you were expecting. And an example she gave, I remember, was, let's say you tell a friend or your counselor, pray about it or whatever, that you want to learn about forgiveness. You want to be a more forgiving person. Well, very likely, somebody or some situation is going to come to you in your life that's almost unforgivable. because you asked for it. You're like, now is your time to practice. Here it is. And so I think it's hard to remember that sometimes when we're in a situation that's causing us pain, that there's probably a lesson for us there to be learned, and maybe we asked to learn this lesson. So I'm going to skip to my present life now. I try to keep learning and growing. There's been so many people in Winona and this fellowship that I have served on committees with that I've learned and grown from. I have such gratitude for the people in my life, and some of them are here that allowed me to be a doula at their birth. Those experiences when somebody allows you into that very intimate and precious time of their life is such a gift. And each time that I saw that baby take its first breath and bond with their parents, it brought me to my knees every single time. I mean, it's just such a spiritual presence. I'm so grateful for that. Let's see. I attend a virtual Al-Anon group, and I learn so much from the people there with their honesty and willingness and vulnerability to accept the things they cannot change, which is part of a bigger prayer by Reinhold Niebuhr, who I don't think I'm related to, but I wish I was, because he had lots of good things to say. But and that is a great source of inspiration and comfort to me. Oops. And then Cherie had mentioned the Catholic Worker, where people would find me. And so many people from spending time at the Catholic Worker and the warming shelter have influenced my spirituality. I think it's a flaw in our Western thinking that our teachers are, you know, the great mystics and the profound writers and thinkers of our time and of the past, because often my most powerful teachers have been very ordinary people. People who have been prickly sometimes and hard to be around, situations that have caused me pain or suffering have been great teachers for me. Being a part of people's lives who struggle with mental health, addiction, poverty, just being a damn struggle to get out of bed every single day, I am so in awe of their ability to just pick themselves up and continue again and again. It's so taught me so much. And I learned so much from them because they develop communities in the most dire of circumstances. It might be because they tented together when they had no home or whatever. It's just very inspiring to me, and I feel gratitude to be a part of their communities. Years ago, the anthropologist Margaret Mead was asked by a student what she considered to be the first sign of civilization in a culture. The student expected Mead to talk about clay pots, tools for hunting, grinding stones, or religious artifacts. But no, Mead said the first evidence of civilization was a 15,000-year-old fractured femur found in an archaeological site. A femur is the longest bone in the body, linking the hip to the knee. In societies without the benefits of modern medicine, it takes about 6 weeks of rest for a fractured femur to heal. This particular bone had been broken and had healed. Mead explained that in the animal kingdom, if you break your leg, you will die. You cannot run from danger. You cannot drink or hunt for food. Wounded in this way, you are meat for your predators. No creature survives a broken leg long enough for the bone to heal. You are eaten first. A broken femur that is healed is evidence that another person has taken the time to stay with the fallen, has bound up the wound, has carried the person to safety, and has tended them through their recovery. A healed femur indicates that someone has helped a fellow human rather than abandoning them to save their own life. Helping someone else through difficulty is where civilization starts, Margaret Mead said. never doubt that a small group of thoughtful, committed citizens can change the world, for indeed, that's all who ever have. I'm going to end with the biggest surprise to me that has inspired my spirituality are actually people I have met from the Catholic Church. I wasn't raised Catholic. I really don't know anything about all the dogma of the Catholic Church that so many of my friends have rejected. But when I moved back to the Winona in 1982, my life started intersecting with a lot of people who were raised Catholic and also the radical side of the Catholic Church. I met Mary Farrell in 1985 when I went to the Strategic Air Command in Omaha, Nebraska, with some brothers from St. Mary's University. And I was arrested there along with a lot of other people, in fact, Bob Copeland. That's where I met Bob. Because of my friendship with Mary, I became involved with the Catholic Worker early on. And much to Mary's surprise, I actually met Dorothy Day. And she didn't, so she's never forgiven me for that. But in 1970, a friend of mine from college was living at the Catholic Worker farm in Tivoli, New York, where they raised the food for the soup kitchens in New York City. And I went out to visit her. I didn't know anything about the Catholic Worker movement, but Dorothy Day was there at the New Year's Eve party, so I got to meet Dorothy. Anyhow, I forgot all about the Catholic Worker movement until I met Mary, and then she told me about her past and her vision to open a Catholic Worker here in Winona. Our beloved speaker, Vince Hatt, who has since passed from the Franciscan Spirituality Center, was my spiritual director for a long time. So I spent a lot of time with him, and I went to a lot of events down at the Franciscan Spirituality Center. Also seen Sister Prejean speak at Viterbo College was a profound evening for me. I can still see her up on the stage, this really small woman who worked with prisoners on death row for a long time, and I can see her talking about how all of us have done something in our lives that we regret, something that we're ashamed of, and that we don't want our entire being and our entire life judged by that one thing. And this is what allowed her to work with people who had committed murder and death row inmates for as long as she did. It was a profound evening. So I try to remember that wisdom when I'm getting into a judgmental space of others or myself. And as many others in this fellowship, I'm also a fan of Richard Rohr's. And when I read his meditation this morning, I was like, oh, I'm going to put that in my talk too. But I didn't, because you can only put in so much. But I do have a quote of his that I'm going to end with that I feel like represents my sense of spirituality. Our Western culture leans towards self-sufficiency and independence, and we often need to be reminded that we are part of a greater whole and that we are not alone in our longings and efforts for peace, justice, and healing. This is one of the great gifts of what we usually mean by church, a gathering of people in solidarity of purpose. Find some way in which you can join in a life that is greater than your own. Participate in a vigil, sharing the grief and hope of your neighborhood or your world. March with others to bring visibility and voice to an important issue. Make a pilgrimage to a sacred or violated site to connect your small place in time with a history and a broader meaning. Rest in the knowledge that spirit weaves your participation as a single thread within a life-renewing pattern. You are connected to the source of life. Thank you.
Now, we really want to get our money's worth by asking questions, okay?
Well, maybe gratitude is the answer. Maybe you already gave it. But how you recharge, or when you share so much of yourself, what do you do to fill up?
Yeah.
What do you like to do?
I'm not as always good at that as I should be. I have to say, I'm getting better. For me, it's walking a lot. You know, like I walk alone quite a bit, and so walking and spending time outside is like the thing for me. And I would say that is even like a way that I break rumination sometimes. Like if I'm not sleeping and worried about a situation, a lot of times I'll just get up out of bed, go out on my deck, and go, wow, it's a big world out there. It's a lot bigger than this tape I got going on in my head, you know? And so I think nature is just like such a peaceful place to spend time in and to rejuvenate in. Yeah.